You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.
Hello, and welcome to SpyCast from the secret files of the International Spy Museum in Washington, D.C. I'm Peter Ernest, the executive director of the museum. I served for some 36 years in the Central Intelligence Agency, largely as what is called an operations officer or a case officer. Every month, we'll be bringing you interesting talks with visitors, with authors, and with others who have something to do with the world of intelligence and espionage. My guest today is Dr. Herbert Lin. Dr. Herbert Lin is a leading scientist in this country in the field of cybersecurity, related matters, cyber warfare, cyber attacks. And he produced a report this past April of last year having to do with the subject. As many of you know, I think, the museum itself has added a new gallery on this subject of cyber warfare, cyber attacks. And Dr. Lin is someone we have been in touch with. We have sought his advice. And so I welcome you here today. We will explore this subject, and I realize that it won't be exhaustive, but I hope we can touch on the things that are of particular concern. Would you please just describe for me, in a few words, the nature of this report? And I know you served as chief scientist, but can you sort of place it for us organizationally, if you will?
Okay. Organizationally, this report was produced by the National Research Council, which is a part of the National Academies. The National Academies operate under the congressional charter given to the National Academy of Sciences to provide advice to the federal government on matters of science and technology that relate to public policy. This study was done under those auspices. It was funded by the MacArthur Foundation and Microsoft and by internal Academy monies itself. My role in it was that I was the study director of this project. It was chaired by retired Admiral Bill Owens, who's a former vice chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and former Deputy Secretary of State Ken Dam. Those were the chairs of this, and we had a variety of cybersecurity and information technology experts and a variety of international and military-type lawyers and so on to investigate this subject.
Well, as you know, this has been a front-burner subject off and on. President Obama gave a key speech about the subject of May of last year. I believe Secretary Gates, Department of Defense, then named someone to head up the military side of this. And I believe just recently, President Obama named someone to head up that under the executive branch. This is a subject that I think you know. It has been a difficult one for many Americans to grasp because it is in many ways an invisible world. We can't see it. We can't count things as easily as we can with military attacks or even espionage when secrets are stolen. What I'd like to do is get us right into the subject. As you and I sit here, the news of the dispute between Google and the People's Republic of China is headline news. And I'd just be interested in hearing your comments right off on the nature of the dispute and what you make of it.
Well, the press report, I only know about it when I've read in the press, but I read a lot of press on this issue. I haven't investigated it myself. But from what I've been able to piece together, the issue centers on two particular activities that Google has uncovered. One is the targeting of the Gmail accounts of certain individuals, specifically certain human rights activists in China. Human rights activists who are concerned about human rights in China, not necessarily in China physically. And the second has been the penetration of various corporations and other entities in the United States to get certain parts of their intellectual property, and in particular their computer codes that help run their operations. Google says on some interesting circumstantial evidence that this is an activity that has been organized by China, but the proof that it is tied unambiguously to a decision by the Chinese government to actually conduct these activities, that's missing. Nobody has that, and nobody therefore knows whether it in fact is the Chinese government that is responsible. So there are, as I say, there's circumstantial evidence pointing in this direction, but at this point it is circumstantial.
You know, we were here in the Spy Museum, and as a former intelligence officer, and I was involved in both intelligence collection as well as covert action during the Cold War, and I look at this capability, as I understand it, posed by the cyber world. And I think the capabilities of intelligence collection, it's awesome for someone like me. It bestrides anything any of us knew, the capability of gaining others, whether it's corporate secrets, military secrets, plans, and so forth. It truly boggles the mind. I also think that if we consider the capabilities posed by the so-called Trojan horse, being able to put something in someone else's computer to affect it, as it were, also poses incredible capabilities in the field of covert action. And I just would ask you to comment on both the field of collection, espionage as we know it, and covert action.
I think that both of those are very definitely the central issues here, that the term used usually regarding the collection of intelligence is cyber exploitation. That is, the exploitation of intelligence assets to obtain information. And by cyber exploitation, you mean by using cyber means to get that information. So an interesting example of that might be that if, for example, you have a Wi-Fi station here in the museum, which you probably do, most firms do, maybe I could come in and put up an antenna and intercept your traffic, and you'd never know that I was doing that, and I could then get all of your sensitive information that you have here. Now, you're not a classified organization, it's probably harmful for you to get certain business secrets out and so on, but it's not going to compromise the national security. If you did this over at the Pentagon, and if they had a Wi-Fi station there, then you might be able to pick up something interesting. Now, of course, at the Pentagon, they know about this, and so they're not going to do this, or they're going to protect it, or something like that. So what I've just said there isn't a serious threat. But the general principle is the same. You put up an antenna someplace, and you can intercept traffic that gets broadcasted into the air, and the guy who's broadcasting will never know that you picked it up. So that's and if you're able to decode it, to understand it, he'll never know that you have it. So that's an example of what you call cyber exploitation. That's the sort of thing that you were talking about.
And we do know that there have been instances where the Pentagon and other classified facilities have been hacked into.
Absolutely.
Not just on the basis of having a Wi-Fi that someone got into with a nice tall antenna, but actually hacked into, meaning someone was able to penetrate their
Absolutely right. So, for example, one thing that I could do if I were seeking information on a computer, on your computer, for example, is that I could introduce somehow into your computer a little program, you could call it a Trojan horse if you like, that would sniff around your computer and look at all the words, all the files in there containing the word nuclear, for example. And then when it found those files, it would just package them up and email them to me at 3 in the morning to a site that you would never know about. Unless, of course, you were monitoring your outgoing traffic. And if you were monitoring your outgoing traffic, then you might detect this, but if you weren't, then you wouldn't detect this. And, of course, I might know that you were monitoring your outgoing traffic, so I might be able to conceal the fact that there's information outgoing, so that even if you notice information going out, you wouldn't think that it was anything bad, anything sensitive. So that's one way you can... That's just one of many, many different ways that you could get information out of your computer through the internet, for example, without having this antenna, but having a wire go into your computer.
And what you're describing is spying in its purest form.
That is
taking information from someone and they never know it.
That's right.
And in this case, it's bloodless.
That's right.
There's no risk of lives and compromises, scandals, and so forth.
That's right. That's exactly
right.
What
about the covert action?
The covert action part of it is a different dimension of it. The term that you use, covert action, has a particular legal definition within the context of the U.S. government. But I think that what the lay person's definition of it has to do with things that you do that might be destructive in some way, but that are done secretly. Okay, I think that's the sense in which you originally meant the
secret
meant,
action right, the, to influence th- things
that's,
elsewhere.
That's right. So, yeah. For example, I might be able to get into your computer and destroy the data on it. I might be able to go into your computer and change some of the data on it. I might be able to go into your computer and prevent you from using it when you wanted to use it. So all of those kinds of actions, generically what we call cyber attack, are things that one could do under this general label of covert action. And so you could easily imagine trying to influence the outcome of an election by hacking the software in an electronic voting machine so that lo and behold, your candidate wins rather than the guy who was supposed to win the election. This is not an example that I know that anybody has considered that we think is at all likely, but it is a possibility. And you just have to ask the question, does any nation have an interest in and a capability in influencing the elections in another nation? And maybe the answer to that is yes. In which case, cyber attack gives you some method for doing so under some circumstances. I should add that in the press, cyber attack usually means both this destructive kind of action and the stealing information kind of action. So the public discussion usually lumps both exploitation and attack underneath the label of attack. So that's a caution for anybody who's listening to it. Nonetheless, your point about covert action is right, and there are very many ways of using a computer, using the internet to degrade your service, to destroy data, to alter data.
Is it without putting too fine a point on it, is it accurate to say that there are, as we sit here, something on the order of tens of thousands of cyber attacks on this country every day?
I think it's fair to... I don't want to say tens of thousands, but there are lots and lots and lots of cyber operations, if you will, that are conducted against us, against the United States, and entities within the United States. Now, this includes a variety of things. So, for example, it might include... denials of service, where the other guy is trying to prevent you from using your computer properly. There are lots of players trying to take over your computer so that they can be used by somebody else clandestinely, so that your computer becomes an agent for somebody else, an unknowing, and you become an unwitting agent for some bad guy in Zendia or Albonia to start using your computer for his purposes, and you'll never know that. There are thousands and thousands and thousands, uncounted attempts to gain personal information. In fact, no doubt you have at the Spy Museum and my work at the National Academies, we have a spam filter that catches spam mails. Now, a lot of these spams are advertising Viagra and pornography. But it's interesting, if I go to one of those sites, if I'm interested in those topics, maybe I might go to one of those sites and pick up a computer virus that might do something bad to my computer, and therefore pick up a... when it does something bad to my computer, I'm now no longer able to use it in the way it was intended. So, for example, he may be trying to compromise my computer to use against somebody else. He may be trying to steal information from me, and so on. So all sorts of things.
Well, let me ask you. Your report is quite formidable. It goes into a number of aspects of these uses of the computer. And I know that we are looking as a country at both the offensive and defensive capabilities that we can develop. One of the things that comes up is, of course, the extent to which, at this time, a computer attack from abroad, let's say, against this country, could actually wreak damage on financial systems or one thing or another. And there's often reference to what people call the electrical grid, the power grid in our country, which, as I understand it, there is a major power grid or electrical grid on both the East Coast and West Coast and in Texas. And I know that's a subject that is of great interest to people, and I would enjoy your comments on that, the possibility that such a thing could happen.
What you're talking about, I think, is the question of whether or not a cyber attack could do long-term extensive damage to the power grid of the United States. And these fears were largely crystallized in an experiment done by the Department of Energy, I think in 2007 or so, in which they did a cyber, they ran a test in which they conducted a cyber attack on a generator, and they caused the generator to go haywire.
Was this the Aurora experiment?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. And the generator went... killed itself because it ran too fast and started to smoke, and you saw pictures of a smoking generator and so on. And that was an interesting experiment, and from a cybersecurity standpoint, from the perspective of experts who followed this sort of stuff before, there was nothing new in this. But it was a graphic demonstration of the power of this, and movies of this were filtered around the country very quickly, and people paid a lot of attention to this particular graphic demonstration. So that's where many of the concerns originated, is in seeing this particular graphic. Now, it's important to understand the nature of the power grid. It's that there are generating facilities and there are transmission facilities, and so on. And the whole grid operates in a way that the whole grid is completely synchronized with each other. And when you flip a switch here in Washington, D.C., something happens as a result of this half a second later in Montreal or something like that. And so the system that controls all of that is what's generally called the bulk power distribution system. And the concerns about a cyber attack usually do not focus on individual generators, individual generating facilities, but on the larger distribution system. And there are people who worry about the larger distribution system, and you can make judgments about how likely it is that a cyber-only attack could take down this grid. My own personal judgment about this is that the real issue there happens to be not cyber attacks against the grid so much per se, as cyber attacks coupled with physical attacks like bombs and so on that might destroy certain components that are essential for transmitting electricity across large distances and so on. And these components, there's only one of them in the world, and it's sitting there in place, and there's no replacement available on an easy time scale. That is, it'll take you 6 months or 8 months or a year to get it back. And these guys, maybe, I mean, I don't know where they're built, but worst case, maybe they're built in China. I don't think that's actually true, but it might be. But in any case, it'll take a year to replace this big block of equipment. And why we don't have replacement, you know, one of those sitting around, probably $10, $15, $20 million, but I mean, non-trivial change, but as insurance against a cyber induced, not a cyber attack, but a cyber induced electrical catastrophe. My own personal judgment, strictly personal judgment, is we ought to have some of those sitting around, and we don't. So I'm personally not worried so much about a cyber attack alone coming over the internet that takes down our power grid, but rather a cyber-assisted attack that might enable somebody to help destroy some of these components. And maybe and it is known that the most effective way to destroy some of these guys is with bombs and explosives. And so that would be that to me is sort of the bigger threat.
And of course we've seen in the few instances we've seen so far that we know of where it appears that cyber has been used in an attack. I'm thinking of when we first went into Iraq ourselves, and we wanted to, quote, blind Saddam Hussein, and when the Russians went into Chechnya, and more recently, the attack in Estonia, I believe. These were cyber attacks, but other things were going on, political pressure and so forth, in the case of Chechnya, obviously, and Iraq, essentially a military situation. So there was force, military force in the sense of, combined with the use of cyber power, if you want, and that's what you see as a
threat. That's right. I think that's where, to me, the rubber meets the road on this. But if you're going to worry about cyber, you should. I mean, I don't want to misstate the case. You should worry about cybersecurity a lot. But it's cyber in conjunction with some other physical kinetic action. Really poses the threat, rather than just cyber alone kind of thing. I don't want to rule that out. I mean, it's possible,
sure,
that a just cyber alone thing could do it. But to me, the more interesting and much more plausible case is cyber in connection with something else.
Let me you've had recourse to your personal view through the conversation. Let me just ask you: do you feel that we as a country are moving quickly enough today to deal with things like the ongoing cyber attacks and the cyber phenomenon as we face it?
No. And that is not just my personal opinion. I think I can point to a variety of reports issued by the Computer Science and Telecommunications Board, for which I work, over the past several years, past decade or so, which point out vulnerabilities and the need for urgent action and so on. So no, we're not moving in the direction of greater cybersecurity fast enough, and the knowledge base that we have for dealing with it is inadequate.
Well, Dr. Lin, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you so much for joining us today. Given the nature of the subject, I want to leave the invitation open, because I think we'd very much like to have you back, because I think there are going to be more phenomena like the current Google-China standoff.
That's great. Let me refer explicitly in this podcast to the report that we did on cyber attack, which the title of which is Technology, Policy, Law, and Ethics Regarding U.S. Acquisition and Use of Cyber Attack Capabilities. And you can go take a look at it at www.nap.edu.
Oh, that's terrific. It's not classified anyway. It's available on the internet. And that has that touches on a number of subjects you've touched on here today.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much again.
Well, we look forward to continuing this dialogue with you. And we'd like to know if you have any comments or questions on today's SpyCast. You can get in touch with us through email at spycast@spymuseum, that's one word, .org. That's spycast@spymuseum.org. Thank you.